This interview was produced for Red Eye, a 3-hour current affairs program on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
The fire department sends more trucks to fight a five-alarm blaze than to rescue a treed cat. A patient with a heart attack gets more medical attention than a patient with a stubbed toe. Public services are available to all, but most readily available to the most needy. If public transit is a public service, it follows that those with the greatest need, the poor, elderly, and disabled, with no other transportation options, should have the best access to the service. Research by the Bus Riders Union, with the assistance of Simon Fraser University's Action Research Exchange, shows that in Vancouver, this is not the case. To tell us more, I'm joined by Jennifer Efting and Katerina Anastasiadis. Anastasiadis, right?
Right.
And Jennifer is an organizer with the Bus Riders Union. Katerina is a sociology student at SFU who's involved with Action Research Exchange. Hello, Jennifer.
Good morning.
And Katerina, sorry for mashing your last name.
No, quite all right. You did a good job, actually.
Jennifer, could you begin by describing the research you developed with ARX? What questions were you trying to answer?
Well, what we were specifically wanting to know is what is the race, gender, and class makeup of neighborhoods in Vancouver, and is there a correlation between being in a poor neighborhood that's mainly people of color and low-income people and having poor bus service and poor air quality? Because that was the sense that we got from organizing on the bus for the last 4 years and doing what in academic language they call qualitative research, so talking to thousands of bus riders and learning their experiences.
And having ridden the buses, you always know if you're riding in the west side of the city, you've got a lot more room to move than if you're riding on the number 20 bus,
right?
And you're kind of all mashed together.
Okay.
So Katerina, how did you go about answering those research questions?
Well, basically I was sort of restricted in terms of time, so I wasn't able to go and do sort of more qualitative analysis. So I was basically left to look at secondary data that had already done research for me. So I looked at the census data that the government had collected in terms of establishing information on the race, class, and ethnicities in each community. As well, I went to the GVRD website on the internet, and I got information on the monitoring stations in the communities that I wanted to look at. As well, I had some interviews with a couple professors, one at SFU, one at UBC, but that was more to guide the research than anything.
And what did you find out by looking at that data? Monitoring station, so
right.
that's air quality.
Air quality monitoring stations.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, it was difficult to get specific information on the main community because there was no monitoring station that was adequate to take the readings that I needed for that particular area. So I had to calculate two means from two stations, but for the Shaughnessy area, there was conveniently one that you could gain access to, so it was a little more difficult to find the information for the Main Street community.
So what we asked Katerina to do was to compare the Main and Broadway area, which is an area that we've organized in for the last 4 years, and the Shaughnessy neighborhood. So that's what Katerina is talking about there. And the reason why we called ARX initially was that we tried as busy organizers to find this information on our own. And the issue is that the way that the census organizes their neighborhoods mm-hmm. is not actually the lived neighborhoods in the community. So a census neighborhood might cover an affluent part of the city and a less affluent part of the city. Whereas as people who live in Vancouver, we know that as a lived reality, those are two separate communities. So it became very hard for us to, just by looking at the census data that they put out, to understand what the racial and class makeup was of the city.
And I just wanted to add that that's a good point, is that I had to use a specific program that I had access to only because I was an SFU student. It's called P-Census. So that was the only way I could trace the specific information I needed, because as Jen was saying, the census data doesn't give information on, you know, specific areas like the lived realities. Mm.
So so when you took all that data and looked at it, were you able to kind of come up with some kind of conclusions as a result of that?
Oh, definitely. In terms of just the sheer population, obviously, well, not obviously, but the Main Street community was more populated. It was like about 50,000 responses that I had in front of me versus Shaughnessy community, which was about 10,000. And the transit service was equal. There were like maybe there was an equal amount of routes going through there, but the people didn't have as much access because of the population.
Hmm. So in a sense, you would just say that it was that area wasn't as well served,
right,
by transit.
Right. No, not at all.
As the Shaughnessy area, what are some of the ways that that TransLink could address the inequality in the system?
Well, we really think we actually put out a report in 2004 called Women in Transit Towards Social Justice in the Vancouver Region, and one of the key recommendations that came out is that. You can't have a gender blind or a class blind or a race blind attitude to transit planning. And in fact, when you do, you actually exacerbate class and race inequalities in this city. So the first step that we would say, there's very concrete measures beyond having a anti-racist and anti-sexist approach, which would be our first recommendation, anti-racist, anti-sexist approach to transit planning. But concretely, we're calling on them to lower fares, and we're calling on them to divert the money that they put into the RAV line into actually increasing bus service and ensuring that buses are wheelchair and stroller accessible, which in fact they're not on all trolley buses that run through Vancouver right now.
Hmm. Now, I just wonder if you could unpack that for me a bit when you talk about, like, it's pretty obvious from that transit has a real kind of impact on people, or it needs to serve people who have less money, who are from classes that where people have less money. In terms of race, can you unpack that concept for me a bit, how race comes into the issue of transit?
Yeah. This was one of the reasons we took up the ARX project also, was that when we talk about transit in the city, we need to talk about racial segregation and really dismantle the idea of multiculturalism that exists in Canada, that Canada is not a racist place, where we certainly didn't lynch people like in America, so we don't have a racist past. So we challenge that idea. We say that Canada is a racist place, that class is often experienced through race, so the working class is disproportionately people of color and Aboriginal people.
Which is what I found.
Yeah, and so they're disproportionately located on the bus. So when TransLink makes decisions like cutting bus service, mm-hmm. cutting late night buses, raising fares, we're not saying that Larry Campbell sits down at night and plots how to impact people of color in a negative way. We're saying that, in fact, he probably doesn't think about them at all. And that's how he ends up exacerbating those inequalities.
Now, Katerine, you were mentioning the special software tools that you had to use. Could you tell us more about that and what kind of information enables you to find?
Okay, well, what it is it's a program called P-Census, and I can't remember the exact cost of it, but I do remember the library assistant telling me that it's quite expensive and that I was lucky to even have access to it at SFU. So basically what you can do is you can trace polygon or a circle, an area, with whichever boundaries you'd like, and it comes up with whichever statistics that are available from the census information, the recent census.
So you would plot out something, for
right.
instance, on a map, and
yes.
that would give you
yes.
that specific thing.
Oh, yes.
Kinda,
yeah. It was cool. very I was very excited about it. Actually, it made my work a lot easier.
Now expertise and access to specialized tools are some of the things that people like transit planners use to gain credibility with politicians and with decision makers. Jennifer, how does acquiring some of those same tools affect bus riders union's ability to influence public policy?
Well, the way that we put it in the BRU is that we're trying to build the expertise of people who ride the bus to come to a point where, in fact, not only are we the experts in the transit system in the sense that we ride it every day, but in fact building our expertise to a point where we can tell them exactly how they should run the system. I mean, we have a sense now, obviously, and it builds every year that we keep organizing, but to say, and in fact the way that they're running the system is irrational, and putting people first and having an anti-racist, anti-sexist approach is actually the rational way to run the transit system and the way forward for everybody. So,
and how does this particular kind of this kind of like these research results and this particular kind of specialized kind of language around that? How does that work as a kind of fulcrum to help you get your points across?
Well, we organize our work according to campaigns. So right now we're working on a campaign to lower bus fares. So we use Katarina's research when we're developing our leaflets on the bus to a certain extent. We're using it in workshops, and we'll also be using it when we're presenting to TransLink, because TransLink TransLink doesn't want to think about the racial segregation or the class segregation in the city. Like I said, it's kind of they put forward this colorblind or classblind approach.
So does that research kind of lend some kind of legitimacy to your arguments when you're interfacing with groups like transit?
I think we use it closely with our research, which is done on the bus. So we use this kind of scientific data along with things called the Public Transit Human Rights Violation Report form, or a testimonial form, which we gather from people on the bus. So we view them both as being impactful in different ways. This kind of scientific research is really important, and also the discussions with hundreds of bus riders about their day-to-day experiences.
I just like to add that I think, you know, it's definitely, I think it's looked upon more seriously for some reason, although it shouldn't be at all, but, you know, people will sort of look at the facts and just want the short, you know, the short deal, and they'll sort of be more willing to accept that or to consider that rather than, you know, actually going to look at the qualitative information, the personal interviews. So I think that that's why they both complement each other very well.
Vancouver City Council is currently reviewing a plan called the Vancouver UBC Transit Plan, and the city is asking TransLink to consider free fares in the downtown and a review of fares across the board. Do you think policymakers are becoming more receptive to the concerns of the BRU and other groups who are raising issues about the transit system?
Somebody put this question to me before, saying, is the Bus Riders Union gaining in credibility in the community? I mean, possibly. I think that definitely on the buses we're gaining in acceptance, and people look forward to seeing us get on the bus, largely. In terms of politicians, I don't want to be cynical, but I also think that they're, it's when it's politically advantageous for them to support the demands of the Bus Riders Union, they'll do so, and particularly with the city councilors who sit on the TransLink board and in city council. Larry Campbell voted in favor of raising fares and then voted in favor of recommending to TransLink to lower fares. So I think it's based, I mean, we want to take advantage of this political moment to push them to actually implement the policies they're talking about.
And do the two of you see new potential then for sort of connections happening between research organizations and grassroots organizations?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. We always welcome building alliances and building strength where we can and finding allies where we can. Yeah.
I agree with that too. I mean, this is just one example of that happening.
Well, I really appreciate the two of you joining me this morning and just talking about this work that you've been doing together. It's great.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. I've been speaking with Jennifer Efting of the Bus Riders Union and Katarina Astasiadis, who's a fourth-year sociology student at SFU.
Red Eye is produced by an independent media collective and airs on Vancouver Cooperative Radio. You can hear the program from 9 until noon Pacific time, streaming live at cooperadio.org.